This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 349, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 349, We Won't Quit. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Ron.
And filling in for Josh, who we affectionately know around the office as Glasses, is Paul Montgomery.
Why am I here again?
Because it's vacation time.
It is vacation. August is vacation time. So at okay. iFanboy. But we are from the website iFanboy.com, which is all dedicated to comic books and the love of comic books. And every week we read a stack of comics, and then we come here to talk about the pick of the week, which was the book that one person decides was their pick of the week. And they write a review of it over at iFanboy.com. Then we come back here to talk about it, as well as answer your questions, tune into what the iFanboy community is digging in the world of comics, and just whatever else that makes us laugh. Sometimes we rip off other podcasts. That's what happens. Before we get to the show, I want to warn you that we're going to talk about what happens in the comics. So if you haven't read your comics, they might get spoiled. So just be warned. You might want to press pause, come back, listen later, or just, you might have the key plot point revealed. So this week, I was scheduled with the pick of the week, but with great power comes great responsibility, as Stan Lee once told us. And in honor of the release of Scalp number 60, I went to Connor. I said, I think I got to step aside. I think we need to switch weeks.
Well, what happens, and I had to pick last week, and we switch weeks all the time when one of us can't do the show.
Yeah, whatever, travel schedules and things like that. Yeah, exactly. And it normally balances out. Like, sometimes somebody has one extra or two extra or something like that, but normally it balances out.
But I don't think we've ever skipped specifically for a pick, although I remember many years ago during Blackest Night, Josh was lamenting that he couldn't pick Starman as pick of the week when they had that new Starman issue. And yeah. I said, why don't you just ask me to switch? I would have switched. Because at the end of the day, no one's going to die.
Right.
So,
and it's also.
I read my stack early on Wednesday, and I didn't have a big stack, so I ended pretty quickly. And I talked to Ron, and I said, "Hey, what's your pick?" And he's like, "Well, I have a pick, but I'm not like super in love. It's not the best book I've ever read." I said, "Well, then I really would like to switch with you because I think I need to write about Scalp." So
yeah, and now here's the thing is that, and the exact conversation we had was like, Scalp, I respect the work Jason Aaron and Aram Gare have done. I know there's a lot of fan of following. I'm reading in trades, and so I didn't even get the issue. And so I felt, sometimes it's okay to step aside. So Connor, take it away.
So Scalp number 60 is the pick of the week, the final issue of Scalp. And if you remember, 59 was also the pick of the week, which came out, like, I think 6 weeks ago. I think there was a two-week delay on this issue for whatever reason. It was supposed to come out originally during Comic-Con. It might have been a month delay. Anyway, Scalped is – this was for the eighth time in its run. Scalped was the pick of the week. And, Paul, you are also kind of reading Scalped, correct?
Yeah, I'd like Ron. I read it in trades, but I jumped ahead for this because I don't care.
How far were you in the story when you jumped? Were at the
I don't know.
Okay, well,
there's stuff going on in the reservation. I don't remember.
Okay, so it'll be kind of a monologue, but you guys can chime in. Scalped is a series from Vertigo Comics. Jason Aaron's writer, Aram Guerra, has done most of the issues, although David Fierno, I can't think of his name right now, he did a couple of the great issues. Actually, he got two picks of the week because his arc was fantastic. But this wraps it all up, and if you recall from the last issue, it ended pretty much with the two main characters and the third character, who's been the most important character other than the two main characters, standing in a burning casino pointing guns at each other, and the final shot was them pulling the triggers. And so we had to wait 2 months or so to figure out what happened after those triggers were pulled. And as it turns out, Red Crow, who has been the sort of bad guy, the Tony Soprano of the whole series, and Catcher, who turns out to be the murderer, who's the murderer of Dashiell's mother, who was the main character, Dashiell Bad Horse, and that murder has driven the whole storyline. They turned their guns away from Dashiell and shot up each other because they're the ones who really hit each other the most. Catcher thinks that Red Horse is evil, and Red Horse knows Catcher killed the woman he loved. So
Red Crow. Red Horse. Or somebody else.
Yeah, Red Crow. So
that's what we're here for.
Two of the three guys got shot up, and the third guy lived to tell the tale. Although Red Crow didn't die, he just got shot up really badly. And then,
but what happened to Red Horse?
Red Horse is at a saloon.
Okay.
isn't Red Horse a saloon? It's a saloon at something. Anyway, well, basically the point is, we talked about in the last issue how it had to end badly and bloody, and kind of did, in that the first part of this issue was the shootout aftermath, and then, of course, FBI agent Nitz, who's also been kind of a factor in the whole series, showed up to kill Catcher, because Catcher also, in addition to killing Bad Horse's mother, killed some FBI agents, so he kills Catcher. Catcher kills him in the fire, and so the Red Crow and Dashiell make it out alive as the two other guys die. And then we jump ahead 3 months, and we get the, as I said in my review, sort of the what has become known around here as the 6 feet under ending, which, you know, tells you where everyone sort of goes with their life later.
Now, and everyone's in white pajamas.
Did you put the Sia song on in the background as you read it? Or
it doesn't go as far. I mean, it doesn't take them forever. We just basically see where they are 3 months later, and we get a sort of a sense of where they're going to go with their lives. We don't follow them all the way to death like with 6 feet under, which still, God, what an ending!
Oh God, it's gonna make me cry just talking about it.
But we see that some of these characters have found happiness, and some have not found happiness, and some are still searching for happiness, and it really ends. And it's not an ambiguous ambiguous ending. It's not a definitive ending. It basically hints at where these characters are gonna go, and then they go. And it's for me, you couldn't have ended the series more perfectly. Jason Aaron, when he started this series, was not a big name in comics. He had done The Other Side for Vertigo. He was sort of a new guy in the block. And now at the end of it, 5+ years later, he's, you know, one of the biggest guys at Marvel. He's writing some of their flagship books. He's clearly one of the most talented guys in comics, as well as one of the nicest guys in comics. And it's interesting to see how much his career has changed in that sort of 5-year time span. And the fact is, he's been a great writer from the beginning. And that he has guided this series for this long is a testament to his ability, because it's a really intricate series. It's a really subtle series. It's about hope and family and love, and also horrible violence and despair on the reservation. And it's as intricate and as interesting and as well done as any, you know, long form television show I compared to Breaking Bad. And it's sort of the same, similar tone, and it's as good uh-huh. as that is.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Jason Aaron, you know, he's a favorite writer of all of us for different reasons. Yep. And he, you know, he's like you said, he's not, I mean, it's not as if he's, you know, he doesn't have this large body of work. I mean, really, he's been around for what, 7 years maybe? Like around there, six, 7 years, and this is one of his earliest works. And now, you know, like you talk about with, you know, creators and what they do, this is one of the coveted. You know, he's got a run.
Yep,
he's got a 60 issue. That's the magic number. That was Why the Last Man. Whatever. He's got a 60 issue Vertigo run that has been a success, and that's something a lot of creators don't ever get under their belt, much less get one that everyone likes and loves. And that's what, you know, like, and so it's an accomplishment. You know, like, he can totally check that off his bucket list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're not done. From what they've said in interviews, he and artist Aram Guerra, who we're going to talk about in a second, are eyeing another independent, you know, run together, as much awesome. As a Vertigo book is independent, as it isn't really. They're eyeing another creator-owned, creator-participation book together. So
they should. They clearly clicked. So.
Oh, absolutely. And Aram Guerra, who we should talk about, no book looks like Scalped.
Yeah.
He has a style all of its own. It's very authentic looking, and he's in Spain drawing a reservation in North Dakota, and everyone looks like you supposedly they should look, and everyone has a distinct face, and the acting is wonderful. There's a great silent panels in this issue where you don't need a dialogue to understand what the characters are feeling, and it's just, there's no other. I don't ever pick up a Scalp or another book and think, wow, this looks a lot like Scalped, because Scalped looks like its own thing, and Aram Guerra is as big of a star on this book as Jason Aaron is. I don't think you can have this book be as good as it is without him, and I think he's a superstar in this little niche of people who read Scalped.
Yeah, and as far as I know, I mean, I don't know for sure, and I should probably ask Jason next time I talk to him, but like he got paired with Aram Guerra by Will Dennis, right? Like, didn't he, by the editor at Vertigo? Like, it wasn't like they came with this idea. He's like, I've got this script, and they said, okay, we're going to put this artist with you. Yeah, yeah.
He actually didn't even meet Aram Guerra until, was it last Comic-Con? We were there when they Matt, was it last Comic-Con of the year, New York Comic-Con of the year before?
I think it was.
Didn't they talk about there being like a little bit of a language barrier? At least
yeah, because he's Spanish, right? Or, yeah. So I think that was two New York Comic-Cons ago when they met for the first time. Yeah.
It was, it's just amazing their collaboration, and it's a no-brainer that they should be working together again. They get along really well. But Paul, since having read this, not having read the whole series, what did you make of this issue?
I thought it was it's both a really visceral ending and a really poetic ending. Like, I really liked Dash just sitting on the hill and thinking to himself about this is his home. This is, you know, no matter how much trouble it's given him and how much trouble he's given it, that will always be, like, he'll always be connected to this reservation, this place, and hitching out of there. And you include in the best panels of the week, that last page. And I think that's the perfect way to go. And we talk about what are the best series finales, what are the best finales in comics. Endings are hard, and
really hard.
I think they stuck this one because it's so open-ended, but it you have all of the satisfying concluding beats, and, like, you know, who dies and how and stuff, and you know, so there's that poetry at the end. But then, you know, the beginning, you talk about it being, you know, like multiple, you know, gut shots. And I love that it's the bottom of a page where Dash is walking away from Red Crow, and it's just like this smear of darkness, and it mirrors, you know, what's going on with this guy's, you know, gut, you know. And it's just a really powerful way for two people to part, but then they're also connected by that black smear. I was just really struck by that particular.
The art
panel.
Is visceral, and the art it tells as much of a story as the writing does. I think also in terms of the second half, when we find out everyone ends up, some people ends up in very different places than when they started, but it's all within character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Red Crow ends up basically abdicating all of his power. And he goes off to live sort of as his ancestors did, all, you know, in a teepee off the land. But that's also within him. He's throughout the series, he's been very much a Indian rights person. He's always talked about the ancestors. And so it wasn't like total, left turn that he did that. He finally decided the only way to be happy is to get rid of all the stuff around him that's caused all this pain and just go live off the land by himself. And I really love the ending for Carol. Carol is Red Crow's daughter and the mother of Dashiell's son that he doesn't know about, who was a drug addict, and she has sort of become the force for good on the reservation. And that also was within her character. She just was too weak to do it earlier. And then finally, the saddest one of all was the kid with the one eye, who's basically becoming the new Red Crow, who was once a nice little kid on the reservation who made some bad decisions and now has come down this path where he is having multiple bodies buried and shooting people and clearly going to be the next crime boss on the reservation. So there's sadness in the ending. There's hope. There's love. There's all these things that have always wrapped up in Scalped, all found in this issue, and just wonderful. A wonderful series. And I'm you know, sad it's gone, but also happy that we got this complete story now that we can go back and look at.
It's always sad to see it come to an end. You know, but
yeah. And if you go back in our old shows, our old video shows, our old barbecue shows where we talked about our top five, it was always in me and Josh's top five. It was for the last how many years? So it's always been one of the best series.
Yep.
If not the best.
What do you want to see them do next? Those two together.
I don't even know. I think they've got to go a different direction, don't they?
I think something more like dragons, Dungeons and Dragons kind of fantasy kind of stuff. I think that's probably what's best. Like, I want to see like an elf and like a halfling.
What are you talking about?
I don't want to see any of that.
Yeah, I do actually.
They talk about that in this issue about, or isn't Dash talking about how he used to pretend that he wanted to write epic fantasy stuff?
Yeah,
about elves and dwarves and stuff.
Well,
like
I have a feeling that if Aaron's doing that, it's gonna be in Thor. So, I don't know. Maybe we can get like a buddy comedy.
they could do My Little Pony.
Yeah, they have My Little Pony. They go to IDW, do My Little Pony. Yeah, that's great.
The funniest thing about Scalped and Jason Aaron is if you only know him through Scalped, you think he's probably the scariest dude. And you know, and then he looks kind of like the scariest. He's got a shaved head, and a giant beard. But then you meet him, he's like a giant teddy bear who's very, very funny.
Yeah.
So it just shows you the range of skill he has when you look at this book versus Wolverine and the X-Men.
Dude is hysterical. I think it was at WonderCon, was it, where we interviewed him, and you asked about the ending of Scalped, and he promised that there would be a barbecue and a softball game. And as far as I know, there isn't one in this issue, and so I'm upset.
The liar. So, Ron, let's shift gears to the book that we would have talked about at the top of the show had we not switcherooed everything.
Yeah, so the book that I was going to pick as pick of the week, which I actually started writing, was, and it should come as no surprise, Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan. No, I'm totally kidding. The Rocketeer, number one, by Mark Waid and Chris Omni.
Cargo of Doom being the subtitle.
The Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, number one. Really, there was no other book that I was more excited to read. There was no other book that made me smile. There was no other book that just fucking got it than the Rocketeer.
God, it was so good.
It was so good. I actually got the variant cover with all the Dave Stevens art, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But ultimately, the thing about it is that we've seen Waid and Somni work together on Daredevil. We've seen Waid work on Daredevil, not on Daredevil, on The Rocketeer in the various anthologies that IDW has been putting out. I'm not sure if Somni's gotten to play in that pool yet or if this is his first Rocketeer. But I knew that Chris Somni would be great at The Rocketeer, because I'll tell you a little story. San Diego Comic-Con 2 years ago, when the Dave Stevens Rocketeer artist edition came out, was that 2 years ago? Yeah, God,
sounds right.
So two or three,
long.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm so old. So got my copy there at San Diego, and of course bragged about it on Twitter. So did, and Josh was talking about it on Twitter, and Somni responded, goes, I forgot to order that. And so we reached out. We're like, hey, we'll pick one up for you. And so we picked one up for him. I got the job of mailing it to Chris, and then Chris thanked me in return, you know, and of course paid us back. And he's like, can I give you a sketch to thank you for shipping this to me? And I'm not going to turn down a Chris Omni sketch. And so he's like, I said, yeah. So what do you want? And I said, well, might as well keep it in the family. Do a Rocketeer. So he did me a Rocketeer that is probably one of the best sketches I have. I have it framed. And from that moment on, I'm like, I would kill to see Somni on the Rocketeer. And now that dream has come true, and he totally delivered on it.
I think it looks better here than it does in Daredevil.
I totally agree. I think this looks much. And I don't know if it's because of Jordy Belair on colors, and because I don't know who's coloring him on Daredevil, or like his approach on this issue. But like, if I had to choose Waid and Somni on Rocketeer or Waid and Somni on Daredevil, I'm totally taking Rocketeer.
Absolutely. I think this is more of his style.
Yep.
That style he draws in with his sketches and the style he seems to like. It's something about it. I don't know. You're right. I think the coloring might be a lot to do with it, but I think also the style is a little different.
Because the coloring really is good. I mean, when you flip through the pages, it jumps right off the page. But yeah, Somni's like the thing where he knows how to draw from shadow and not just add in shadow later. That's the big thing.
What's great about that, and on the colors, I think we just need to tip our hat to Jordy Belair, who's really building momentum to be one of the premier colorists in the industry. Like everywhere I turn, her name is on the project.
Yeah.
So great job on Jordy. But yeah, but Paul, you're absolutely right. Somni's ability to handle shadow, and like going back to that sketch, I should scan it and put it up. I had that sketch for a year before I noticed. So basically the sketch is the Rocketeer flying in front of a big Zeppelin, which is just awesome. I think I've tweeted it before. I think I posted it when I first got it. And a year into having the sketch, I realized that the white shadows on the Zeppelin are shadows of planes.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, come on. Really? I was like, holy shit. Like, it blew my mind.
When do you see that kind of detail in a sketch? Like, you know, like let alone in a book. That's amazing.
So his sensibility on this is great. And really, like, and for Wade and Somni to be like, the thing was the Rocketeer is so revered and so loved and so, you know, like put on this pedestal by all of us, because it was, you know, two series, Dave Stevens' finest work. He passed away. Like, there's so much, you know, drama with it, and we all felt a little nervous, similar with the Watchmen projects, to be honest, when they started doing those anthologies, because you're like, you know, I don't know if I want Rocketeer stories by other creators. Yep. But those anthologies really kind of eased us into it and realized, okay, these creators can celebrate this character and get it right. And, you know, and I think editor Scott Dumbier over at IDW is playing this really close, you know, to the vest, you know, to make sure that it's right. So we go from anthologies now to doing another series. And, you know, for Wade and Somni, these are big shoes to fill. And this is totally in the spirit of Dave Stevens. It totally fits within the world of the Rocketeer, and it doesn't stomp all over the grave or any of that. It's just, you know, it's just another great tale with this great character that Dave Stevens created. And honestly, like, I'm fine with getting over that sentimental, you know, like, you know, holding on to it and letting, you know, two top tier creators do something with it and do something great with it. So
Wade did one of the best anthology stories, one of our favorite ones in that first run. His sensibility too is perfect for Rocketeer. It's sort of old school. It's very hopeful. It's kind of swashbuckling.
Yeah,
it's a similar sensibility to Daredevil, actually.
Oh yeah, very very similar. So I mean, so we're going on and on about the stories and the creators, but just quickly on the story, it takes place in 1940, so it's before World War II, but after the other Rocketeer stories that Dave Stevens did. So that's where it fits in the world, and it's just got all the elements that you need. It's got, you know, it's got its Cliff Secord and what's PV? Isn't his name PV or what is the
little guy?
Yeah, PV, and you know, they're, you know, trying to get their plane approved. Approved, and they're always on the edge of disaster, and you know, and something happens, and it keeps Cliff from going on a date with not Betty Page, with Betty.
Betty,
you know, and he's got the typical kind of, you know, the kind of conflicts, and then there's a
threat. He can't win with Betty.
He can never win with Betty. We get introduced. I don't know if I'm pretty sure we're introduced to this character, but PV's niece. Who's kind of like a daughter to him, who has a crush on Cliff. And, you know, there's that great personality that Dave Stevens brought to it, you know, and a great last page with Cliff and Betty making out, but this shadowy threat upon them. And it's like, after this issue, I was in such a good mood. I was so happy. I can't wait for more. So if you've never read any Rocketeer, just pick this up.
Yeah.
It's a great intro into the character.
I think what's great about this, like, you talk about Wade's sensibility, right? Like, Wade's hit, like, I mean, he's been around for so long, but I think he's really hit a definite kind of stride lately with Daredevil and with this, and looking forward to the Hulk book. And because there's all this like fancy free kind of nostalgic 1940s stuff with, you know, Cliff and this young girl. And then you get these scenes on the ship with the surly sea captain, and a dude loses both hands.
Yeah.
And I mean, those things are kind of really jarring, but it totally works here. There's this sense of dread, and there's that it's sort of a two-page layout with going into the hold of the ship.
Yeah.
We're first introduced to the actual cargo of Doom, and those two pages are so gorgeous with the shadows and just the way the colors fall on the objects, and it's a beautiful book.
Yeah, it's great. So honestly, like, you don't need to know of any Rocketeer. You don't need to, you know, you get a basis idea that it's the 1940s, and this guy's got a rock jet pack. That's all you need to know. And it's no surprise that the news is breaking that that Disney is looking to reboot the Rocketeer and do another movie, and it's got to be directly correlated to our reaction to these comics, which is kind of cool to see. So we'll see how it comes out of that. But yeah, that was my pick of the week. So you know, coming in at a close second behind Scalped is the Rocketeer.
This was the week where Batman Incorporated number 3 had its official release. It was supposed to come out the week of the Aurora shootings, and so it was pushed back, rightly so, because it opens with a woman pointing a gun at a group of kids, which at the time was probably too raw to happen. So we get this issue, and this run continues to be wonderful.
Yep.
Matches Malone makes his return. Matches Malone was always one of my favorite elements of Batman. He's Batman's bizarre multiple personality underworld undercover identity, where he puts on this makeup and goes out as Matches Malone and gets the scoop. And it's always been one of those strange things about Batman where clearly he's insane.
Yep.
And he really sort of loves being Matches Malone, who's sort of this, like, he's got the sunglasses and the mustache, and he's always chewing a match, and he's always, He's, you know, he's got the green suit, and just he's sort of his let loose character. And Morrison writing him was just so much fun.
Yeah, and was able to distract from his identity by having Dick appear in the as Batman to threaten him, which I thought was a nice touch. Although, so I don't read Nightwing, but so the Nightwing's got the cape, huh?
Not in the book. That kind of threw me for a bit. I couldn't tell because it looked like he kind of took off the Batman cape from the Batman costume and put it on his Nightwing costume.
Yeah, no, and Bruce says, the cape, I approve. And he goes, I got back into it. So it looks like Nightwing now has a cape again, according to this.
Well, at least in Morrison comics.
Yeah. Well, Morrison's their own little bubble. I'd be fine with him having the cape, but he's just in his own bubble. We got the return of Bat-Cow.
Yep.
Just all kinds of great elements in this series.
And Robin now is Redbird.
Well, he found the loophole. If you get grounded as Robin, all you got to do is create a new super identity, and then you can go out and patrol because he only grounded Robin. He didn't ground Redbird.
Yep.
So he's going to be a lawyer in the future.
He just has that in his back pocket there, just this other additional superhero identity, just in case. Poor Alfred.
Burnham is killing it.
Burnham has been great, and as I said before, if he had been the official, you know, other artist to Quietly, we would have. Yep. People will be talking about this whole Morrison run with more reverence.
Yeah.
He's been fantastic. He's jumped by leaps and bounds. His characters are fun and interesting. It's a little bit exaggerated, but it works for the story. Great action sequences. This is Burnham getting better and better with every issue.
Yep. He's got that Damian pout. No one else can do that quite as good.
Yep, he's got it. So.
Yeah. So Morrison's run of Batman ends with issue 12. This is issue 3, so we're getting there.
Yeah. Well, at least you got a little ways to go. So.
Yeah.
So the aforementioned Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 1 came out, written by JMS with art by Adam Hughes. Connor, you didn't get the last book. Did you get this one?
Yes.
Paul, did you get this one?
I checked this out, yeah.
Okay. I was skeptical because I know, Connor, you were excited about Adam Hughes' interiors, and I was like, whatever. And then I read this. I was like, oh, okay, I see now. Why isn't this guy doing interiors?
He hasn't really drawn – I mean, way, way back when I was a youngin', he did – fill in stuff on Justice League with Keith Giffen, and he did a super Star Trek OGN. Like, he was doing interiors, but he quickly found he either wasn't fast enough or he made way more money doing covers and commissions, and he dropped off the interior game. I don't even know the last time he did
the Brian Boland game, you know.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. He did the Ghost for Dark Horse. Like, he did a bunch of books that were great looking, but he just doesn't do them anymore. So this was a no brainer, even though I thought story wise it was a little overwritten, a little gobbledygooky. But I just you know, took in all the pages. He's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's I think that's a good way of putting it. It's a little bit overwrought in terms of I totally see what he's doing. I think he's, you know, trying to go for that, you know, the symmetry kind of stuff and the stuff that Alan Moore did in the original Watchmen book. But leave that to Alan Moore, kind of. not that this was bad. It's just that you could see what he was doing, and that took me out a little bit.
Yeah, well, the story is
trying so hard.
Yeah, the story is a whole other story, which I'm not even going to touch upon. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to. I kind of want to continue it just out of perverse curiosity as to see where he takes it. But yeah, again, JMS seems to be leading the charge on the I'm going to bring these stories as close to the Watchmen as possible, which is not the point of view that we want. So, you know.
Yeah. I might just get it and read it without the words, read the storytelling from the art-wise, because I just love his art. He was one of my favorite artists for a long time when he actually did interiors. Yeah. But
the art was great.
Doesn't,
the art
doesn't
was great.
Do it anymore.
I like the theme overall, the sort of the clock thing, and then the mystery in a box, and like the opening pages. Like, that's kind of cool, but sort of maybe would work better as like a short, like a five-pager kind of thing, than as, I don't know what this is going to be as a mini-series, because... That's just, I don't know. There's a lot going on in there, and it's very, I don't know. It's trying very hard.
that's for sure. But in terms of trying very hard, but in a good way, schedule-wise, I haven't had a chance to talk about him yet, but the last Marvel annual featured with work by Alan Davis came out this week with the Wolverine annual. And if you weren't paying attention, or you're not an Alan Davis fan, I mean, if you're an Alan Davis fan and you didn't notice this or whatever, go back and pick up the Daredevil annual and the Fantastic Four annual, because basically what this was a Alan Davis written and drawn clandestine story that takes place in the Marvel Universe. And I don't know why they chose to do it through these annuals.
People would buy them.
Yeah, I guess, right. Maybe. Yeah, but this, I mean, Alan Davis, I mean, I know we raved when he did that thing, that Avengers thing with Bendis like a year ago or whatever. It's just a good Alan Davis. This whole thing has been great. And I've read everything he's done on Clandestine, and so it was good to see these characters kind of come back.
But the question is, are you a big Clandestine fan?
All right. I mean, they're not the greatest characters in the world, and a lot of it is the herky jerky. Like, did the series, went away for a while, came back, did another one, went away for a while. But it's nice to see them back, and they're clearly characters he cares about and loves. And it was cool to see them interweave with the Marvel universe in this way. It just looked beautiful. So
I got to be honest. I tried the Daredevil one. I think they put it in my bin because I'm pulling Daredevil regularly. It was not for me.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I had some anatomy issues. I don't want to get hanged here for the Alan Davis thing, but I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
I did. I love Alan Davis. Anyway, I won't hold it against you. Did you like anything?
Did I like anything at all? What
in comics?
You like Planetoid?
Yeah.
Oh, just mean of books of this week. Yeah, I love Planetoid number 3. I think
that was a pale attempt at a segue for you, Paul. I'm sorry.
No, this is Planetoid number 3. It's Ken Gehring is doing this whole book by himself and doing it very well and with a flourish. And this, I think, is my favorite issue so far. He'd mentioned before this book was coming out that this was going to be about, you know, so we've got this Silas character and he's taking charge of this community on this planetoid where everyone's been marooned and they're being oppressed by this like gang of robots. And he said it was gonna be like about how you form like a society and how you survive together in a group. And I was like, okay, that sounds kind of interesting, but how can you really do that in, you know, one issue? And this was just from top to bottom, just great storytelling, great sort of cartooning in terms of, you know, there's a great page of Silas showing these villagers how to weld, how to repair things, how are they going to take care of agriculture and grow food. And there's these random frog people that are in the camp, and some of the people don't want the frog people around because they don't do anything and they don't contribute and they're weird frog people. And it's just, it's great. It's, I mean, I think the previous issue was more of the action stuff with more adventuring and in terms of the big robots and stuff. And there's a little bit of that in here, but this is just how you survive and how you form a community. And that's a tall order for one issue. And he absolutely did it. And it's a really poignant issue. And I think he's doing great work here.
I think the story of Planetoid really has been that the first issue he had worked on for a very long time, put it out there. It was up on Graphically. It got published on Image, and then Image picked it up, and then he had to quickly do 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And so it's been curious to see how he's grown as a storyteller and a creator and how he's improved just in 3 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, just looking at it, I had the thought more than anything that if you're really good, then you're going to, and you get noticed, you're going to get work.
Yep.
Because he's really good. And the thing is, we see a lot of, you know, self-published stuff through iFanboy and through Graphically, and, you know, a lot of it's not very good.
Yeah, well, and it's tough to, you know, true, a lot of it's not very good, and a lot of it could be because people, you know, it's early in their career, there's not enough practice, there's not, you know what I mean? Like, the people who aren't very good can get better.
Sure, but the point is, he was very good,
yeah, exactly.
And he got seen right away and got published. Yeah. So, I mean, he deserved it because he's really good.
Yeah.
So. And it's impressive that he does it all on his own.
Yeah, so happy to see it. So
yeah,
cool.
So if you're like Ken Gehring, because he did this exact thing, you're a creator or publisher, and you're looking to get your book out there in front of people so that people might publish your book, or you publish it yourself and make your own money, you can do it easy and fast. You can go to Graphically.com. We've got the best solution for you. You can upload your books, your comics, your children's books, your sketchbooks, your photography books, anything with graphics in it, and just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting the Kindle store, the Barnes & Noble Nook store, Kobo store, and, of course, the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app made for comics. You can send your readers to the digital bookstores where people are going to look for books already. You can find all that and about pricing and services at our website. Go to graphically.com for more details.
Excellent. So the last issue, issue number 4 of Super Crooks by Mark Miller and Lineal Yu came out, and I've been enjoying the series, and this last issue I enjoyed it that much more, and this was great. This is Ocean's 11 executed by supervillains and was a ton of fun. The ending was crazy and stuff happened, and, you know, we had clear, you know, resolvement, as well as leaving a little, you know, window open for stuff to revisit these characters in the future. But this delivered on the promise on every level. So when it comes out in trade, I would strongly recommend, Connor, you check it out, and even you, Paul.
Cool.
Flash number 12, return of Francis Manapal to art duties after a few months off or a few issues off, and it really does make the big difference with this.
So does.
I also thought the story was really strong. They're getting better. You know, there had been some clunkiness to their storytelling, but I think in this issue it was really well executed. The rogues are all fighting each other and fighting the Flash, and the Flash is still. I find it really interesting thinking about it. Barry Allen, one of the most beloved superheroes of all time. If you go back to those old stories, you know, everyone loved Barry. The town loved him. He had a museum. He was everybody's favorite superhero. But in this book, he is public enemy number one.
Yep.
And it's an interesting place to have Barry Allen be in, where he basically can't even go save people from everyday disasters because everyone thinks he screwed the town up because somebody else didn't lie about it.
And of course, he keeps stumbling into trouble,
and he has to live basically invisibly. He has to constantly be vibrating so no one can see him. And I think that's a very interesting place to have him in. So I think story-wise, plot-wise, it's a great place to go. They're just learning how to tell the story, and I think it does work better when Manapal draws it.
All I know is that when I see that two-page title page spread with the Flash in the bus reflection as the Flash runs by, oh God, I love those pages. So the letters are the buildings in the reflection of the bus. I mean, or the limo or whatever. How great is that? Oh God.
Yeah.
So
and apparently after crashing in the island, the Castle Lost moved to French Central City.
Yeah, apparently.
That feels weird.
So tragedies amongst tragedies, and I'm probably the only one who's mourning this, although I know I'm not because I talked to a bunch of people this week. Sadly, this week was Glamour Puss number 26, and it was the final issue, mainly just because the orders just weren't there and Dave Sim couldn't keep it up. And I know what everybody says about Dave Sim and all that sort of stuff, but it is a goddamn shame because he was doing some great stuff from a comic history standpoint and with his Alex Raymond Stan Drake story that he was doing in here, as well as really honing his art. And I know he's doing work for Star Kings and Elephant Men. So if you want to see one of the best independent creators of our generation continuing to work, check out Elephant Men, check out Glamour Puss. He said he's going to continue to finish this Alex Raymond story and do like a graphic novel or something with it, where The Strange Death of Alex Raymond. And I hope he just finishes it. But there's just a heartbreaking letter at the end of it where he explains what happened and talk about Diamond and the orders and what he tried to do to keep it up. And it's sad because he was doing really, really great work. And it's just another example of how this marketplace is not supporting independent books that are off the beaten path. So
it's sad, especially when it's like a really personal project.
Yeah.
And clearly. Yeah.
Yep. So although I will take some humor out of in the opening parts of his what, you know, kind of what's happening. He kind of sums up, you know, post-Cerebus life for him. And he just doesn't understand why Judenhaus, his Holocaust graphic novel, didn't do better. Do you remember Judenhaus?
Yeah, I remember Judenhaus. I saw Judenhaus on the shelf at the comic store this week.
Yeah, so sad.
I've not been able to shut up about Untold Tales of Punisher Max number 3 this week. I've included in every feature I've been involved in. And you can actually go back and listen to the Don't Miss podcast from this week where I talked to writer Megan Abbott. The reason I'm so excited because she's one of my favorite novelists and she writes crime stuff. And she was going to write a Vertigo crime graphic novel.
Which one?
That line folded.
Oh.
So it's called Normandy Gold, but that line folded before they could even get an artist on it. So, but hopefully there will be wings for that, you know, in some medium. And then her new book, Dare Me, which is about, like, I don't want to say killer cheerleaders because that's a little bit disingenuous, but it's cheerleaders and they're mean and stuff. And that's good. That got optioned to be a film. So, and she's writing that. So exciting. But this Punisher book, I'm not usually a Punisher guy. You don't have to really be a Punisher reader or to have read 1 and 2 from this miniseries. This is the Frank Castle, the Max version that Jason Aaron killed off earlier this year, right?
Yep.
That was the end of that series. But this is like lost stories involving him. And this is sort of like a suburban noir story, a shadow of the past kind of thing. And admittedly, I sort of figured out the twist as I was reading it, but it wasn't one of those like, oh, that's what they're doing. It was, oh, that's what they're doing. That's really interesting. And so it's just this great little noir story and the art's really good. It's Matteo Bufagni. I'm not really familiar with his work, but it looked good. Grady said Ribic cover. I hope she does more comics.
Cool.
Because she's really good with the narration. She's got great prose. Also in that same crime vein, Lobster Johnson, The Prayer of Neferu, which is Mignola and Arcudi, and I'm blanking on the artists. but it's a very, it's sort of a cartoonier style than what we're used to with Lobster Johnson and with the Hellboy related stuff. I don't know what to compare it to, really. There's moments that are a little Darwin Cooky, a little bit Bruce Timm. It's somewhere in there, but it's another great little one shot, and it's about these mummies that have gone missing, and Lobster Johnson is just out for justice. And
that's all he wants.
It's all he wants.
The art was Wilfredo Torres.
There you go. Yeah. And it looks good, and
it's Somni-esque.
Yeah, oh, no, I can see.
I'm sorry, the cover's by Tanchi Zanjek, so that's why I was looking at the cover.
That's a little bit more Somni than the interior, but there's the same kind of whimsy to the art inside as well. So, but it's about, you know, mummies going missing, and you find out that they're trying to, you know, bring back, you know, evil spirits from ancient Egypt, and it involves having particular clerics from ancient Egypt sacrificed, so they have to dig up the mummies, or actually they steal them from the museum.
Now, rarely do you hear mummies are missing, and it's because someone just misplaced them. Yeah. Usually it's some nefarious scheme happening.
It's like wrong cargo container or something. This is very, if you dig like Raiders of the Lost Ark and that Indiana Jones kind of vibe, this is very much like that. There's like a big dude with a huge sledgehammer, and he's trying to kill him, and it's like that big Nazi guy from Raiders, and so it's a lot of fun.
Whenever clerics are involved, it's always good.
Of course.
So, excellent. All right, so those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list. You can rate and review books. And you can make your picks of the week. And Connor, do you want to walk us through the top five picks of the week from the community?
The top five picks of the week from the community at the time of recording are: number five, The Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, number one, with 5.3% of the votes. Number four was The Amazing Spider-Man 692 with 6.7% of the votes. Number three was Invincible 94 with 7.6% of the votes. Number two was Batman Incorporated, number three, with 15.5% of the votes. And the number one pick was Scalped, number 60, with 43.7% of the votes.
So the majority of the community agreed with you, and I dodged a bullet.
You dodged a bullet. It was going to be your Blackest Night number one.
It was.
Across the bear.
On to the user reviews. Our first review comes from Stratichuk S., who reviewed iVampire number 12. This is a book that I literally haven't thought about for a year. After it launched.
Yep.
And Stratichuk S. gave the book a 5 out of 5 on story and a 5 out of 5 on art, so rating it a total 5 stars. And 1% of you made it your pick of the week at the time of recording. And Stratichuk S. says, I just mumbled that name, I can't believe that iVampire keeps getting better each month. Andrea Sorrentino handles the art duties again. It's amazing how good these pages are when Sorrentino is drawing every issue, especially since most other DC books are plagued by fill-in artists. Not that all fill-in artists are bad, but Sorrentino's style perfectly fits the tone of the story that Fialkov is telling, and I can't imagine anyone else drawing it. Fialkov continues to blend some great humor and character work with a dark and compelling story. He's almost created a new kind of vampire story with zombie vampire hunters, or at least one that feels unique to stand on its own. He ends this issue with another huge, completely unexpected status quo shakeup that should give any curious or skeptical fan a great chance to try out one of DC's best and my personal favorite with the next issue. So, positive words there for what Fialkov's done, and I had no fill-ins, same creative team, 12 issues. That's an accomplishment at DC these days.
Especially also, the new 52. Yeah.
That it's still out.
Yeah.
That it survived that first cut. Surprisingly for a genre book like that. It's good to see. PM Vaughn reviewed Venom 23 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And at the time of recording, nobody made it their pick of the week. And PM Vaughn says, I was worried about poor Cullen Bunn having to pick up after Remender's great run of Flash Thompson, but he quickly jumped into the mind of Flash and made me believe that this could still work. I have not been a big fan of Damien Hellstrom, but I don't remember him going evil, which seems common knowledge to Flash in the book. Silas continued to make this book dark and gritty, but still have the feel of it being a Spidey book. All around, I'm excited to see what kind of ride Mr. Bunn takes us on, and I hope he drives Flash further into the dirt than before. Keep up the good work, guys, and you can keep taking my money.
Okay, thank you. Cullen is doing a great job taking over the reins on Venom, and I don't know if Hellstrom's a bad guy. Rather, he's the son of Satan, so I think he is always straddling the line there.
He's always on the edge.
Yeah. Because he was just in Journey into Mystery on the side of Angels, so, you know, who knows.
But he used to be in New Avengers. He was on there, in there too.
He wasn't in New Avengers. He was in the...
Yeah, remember that New Avengers book with... Oh, was it the Avengers book? It was the one that Stuart Eminem was drawing. It was New Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
with the new Doctor Strange.
Brother Voodoo.
Brother Voodoo. Damien Hellstrom was in there for a little.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a defender or a champion or one of those teams. I don't know. Anyway. Anyway, go to ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list, and come back, write a review, get it on the show. On to the email. First email comes from Sebastian, who's known as Bub64882 on ifanboy.com. It's just like the bub in the nose. Is that a zip code? What is that? Anyway, so Sebastian says, one of the truly depressing outcomes of Avengers vs. X-Men, so far anyway, we'll see if Marvel lets it stand, is that Black Panther has annulled his marriage to Storm in AVX number 9. Peter and Mary Jane, Clark and Lois, never happened. Scott and Jean or Madeline, and looking soon like Emma, not anymore. Hawkeye and Mockingbird, nope. Oliver and Dinah, actually, I'm not reading Green Arrow. Betting on nope, though. Now T'Challa and Aurora join the ranks of failed marriages in comics. We have Reed and Sue, who seem to be sacred cows, but otherwise, who is still married? Welcome to the club, North Star. I give you 2 years tops. I understand that in serialized fiction, it's difficult to keep a static relationship interesting, but it's also hard to make Dr. Doom or Lex Luthor seem like a credible threat when we know the hero will beat them every issue, yet those challenges are risen to month after month. Why is it that monogamy can defeat our heroes time after time when aliens, clones, Nazis, and zombies can't? Do you think that writers could make more of an effort to show how sticking around and fighting for your marriage is a heroic way as defeating the Joker?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great email. That's a good one. Yeah, so Black Panther and Storm are no more as of AVX. I don't know if they actually annulled it, because doesn't that mean...
Yeah, he annulled it.
He annulled it? Does that mean they never did it?
Really?
Does that mean
they never did it? Yeah, it means it never happened.
But does that mean they never did it?
Listen, he said, I've annulled the marriage. I don't know what the rules are in Wakanda. Maybe you can have sex and still annul a marriage.
I wasn't surprised they did that, because that always felt ham-fisted to me anyway in the first place. You know, it's like, hey... Yeah, black guy, black woman. Let's put them together. Like, it just seemed a little forced.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion on that particular relationship because I don't really read those books. But the comparison you made is not a true one. You're talking about taking out an entire facet of a person, and when you marry them, then that way you can't have any more romantic stories. And of course, you can have romance in a marriage. But we're talking about fiction here. We're not talking about real life.
Right.
You know, you're talking the same thing happened with Peter when they killed Mary Jane. Is you take away the entire thing of the bumbling guy trying to find love, and that's part of the character. And that's in serialized fiction. That's why in TV shows that run forever, people break up and get back together and break up and get back together, because it's boring otherwise. And he said it in the email. It's because it's serialized fiction. That's the reason. It's different than fighting a hero and villain every time, because that's part of it is fighting. Part of it's the personal stuff, and you're getting rid of the personal stuff when you get them have them be married. I mean, Clark and Lois became really boring as a couple when they got married.
You know, on the show too, and Lois and Clark.
It killed the TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you lose that element, you lose that tension, you lose that excitement, and that's what happens. That's why every TV show or movies don't count, because they're not serialized. But TV show, you know, there's the will they won't they couple, because you go will they too soon, then there's no more won't they, and then no one cares. So
yeah.
That's just the way it goes. That's the way it's always been in fiction.
I think you can tell good stories. I think it can be hard to sustain it.
Yep.
Because when you get to that point, it's sort of like it's not just taking out a facet of their character. It's also you've reached a culmination in a very important part of their life, being their romantic life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nowhere else to go unless you tell, I don't know, Blondie and Dagwood kind of domestic stories, but I don't know.
Well, that's the thing.
Is there anybody left?
Well, I don't think there's anybody left.
Just Reed and Sue.
That's married. Yeah, I think it's just Reed and Sue. But and I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong, and everyone will tell us in the comments who's married, and we're forgetting.
Ralph and Sue Dibney are very happily married in the afterlife.
In the afterlife. Now I got that stupid song by that stupid band. Was that Squirrel Nut Zippers?
That narrows it down.
Don't say it.
In the afterlife.
Oh, it is cool. Oh, fuck you. Oh.
But no, but here's the thing, is that this is something that I've brought up. Like, I am lamenting the loss of romance comics in our world. That the genre of romance comics seem to be gone, whether they're superheroes or not, and especially, you know, but superheroes often did have that, you know, kind of that romance stuff like that. And I think you can still do it. It's just I think nobody wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So
Well, no, it for serialized fiction, it kills that element of it.
Yeah, it does.
These are not real life. No one's saying you can't have romance in a marriage, and it's not the same. It's just you're following a story, and you need there to be tension and romance.
I'm going to be devastated when little depressed boy gets married.
I doubt that'll ever happen the way he's going. That book is great, by the way. I got an out quote on the volume three. Did you see that? My there's a quiet poeticness to this book. It's like one of the best out quotes
ever. Nice. Yeah. That's a great book.
Anyway, all right. Well, if you have any more defense of marriage, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Don't
be happy to hear from you. But no, any other questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. It's been a while since we've done any voicemails, so we want to make sure we had some time. We got some good ones. You all have done a good job with it. And our first one's got an interesting business question.
Hey guys, this is Ian from Nebraska, and I'm calling to ask your guys' thoughts on companies like the Big Two creating their own type of Kickstarter programs where they could pitch ideas to the public and have them essentially say that they will buy the comics before they start putting them in production, so that you could have new stories with characters that you like. And not have to worry about cancellations. Let me hear what you think. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Kickstarter. It's all the rage right now in comics. Everybody seems to have a Kickstarter. It's every third email we get is asking to promote a Kickstarter. And a lot of people wonder why Marvel and DC, or how long until they have their own Kickstarter. Ron, why won't they do it?
It's Kickstarter will solve all of our problems, let's be straight. And actually, it was funny because I heard this, our buddies over on 11 O'Clock Comics talk about this a lot. Jason Wood is very bullish on Kickstarter and loves it and thinks it's the new model and blah, blah, blah. Marvel, and as far, I don't know. I have no inside knowledge. I can't speak of this, but I don't see Marvel or DC or Image or Dark Horse or any major publisher ever using Kickstarter or a Kickstarter model for several reasons. One is that they have it already, and it's called pre-orders. We've already seen examples of books getting announced and not getting ordered enough and then getting canceled. That's how it works. Like you want to avoid a book getting canceled, you'll pre-order it, and that's what keeps it from getting canceled. Secondly, in order to do that, they need to revolve details about who's working on it, what the book is. They want to give you information what you're getting. They're not going to reveal that intellectual property publicly if it's up in the air if they're going to do it or not. All right? And that's just a kind of standard business kind of thing. Third is that – and I had a third one. I can't remember it now. Oh, third is that unfortunately, one of the problems with Kickstarter is that it flies in the – and not unfortunately. I mean, I'm not applying this logic, but unfortunately for Kickstarter in the terms of comics is that the current model flies in the face of the direct market and retailers, and that's why they'll never touch with a 10-foot pole, because what you're doing is you're letting people say, I will pay for it in advance, and you're going to give it to me directly, and it circumvents the entire distribution system. And
oh, yeah. If you thought they didn't like digital, they would hate Kickstarter.
Yeah. So – as far as I would be very surprised if any big publisher ever figures it out. If they wanted to get a little marketing bump, they would figure out a way to make it work and do all that sort of stuff, but it's not worth all the pratfalls. It's not worth the legal problems of announcing a book and not doing it. And also they'll say that they already have a Kickstarter system in place and it's called Diamond, you know. So.
And we should note that that Top Cow did one.
Yes, I do know that Top Cow did one. I do know. But what's interesting about what Top Cow did is that they – The Kickstarter was to make the first five issues free, and they're still being distributed by Diamond.
Yeah.
So they figured out a way to play with it within the Diamond system. I don't think Marvel and DC can make that work on a scale basis. That's a one-off and basis.
That was more of a marketing thing too.
Exactly. Yeah. So, really curious, but I don't see it ever happening. I don't know if you guys disagree or what.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just sick of it.
Yeah.
Like I think there's good projects. I've certainly funded some of them, but like. Everyone's got one. Everyone looks at it as the savior because most of the high-profile comic ones get funded.
Yeah.
And so everyone thinks that'll happen, but I've also seen high-profile ones not get funded.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a crapshoot.
Yep. All right. On to our next question, which has got another business question.
Hey, guys. This is Doug from Yarmouth, Maine. I was calling because I was listening to Word Balloon like several months ago, and Jonathan Hickman was on. And he thought the future of comic books were creators taking licensed characters and just doing their version of them. And I wanted to know what you guys thought. Is there going to be more of that, you know, considering what's going on in Image now? Or do you think it's going to be a combination of that and the... I messed up. Well, but you know what I'm talking about. This won't probably get on air. Thanks.
Well, that's a guaranteed way to get on the show.
That's true. Don't challenge us.
Yeah, we will air it, all right?
I didn't hear this interview, so I don't know exactly what he's talking about. I'm not quite sure from what Doug said what he means by licensed characters and what Hickman meant by that's the future.
I did listen to it, and I totally remembered what he was talking about. Basically, what he said was that the future of work-for-hire work – well, not the future, but what Hickman sees is something that could eventually happen. And I'm totally paraphrasing. I could get it wrong, and you guys will correct me if I did. But I believe what he said was they were talking about the concept of taking a Spider-Man book and telling a Spider-Man story. Out of continuity, a self-contained, you know, kind of thing, kind of like season one or Earth One or whatever, which we're starting to see.
And I can totally see that being.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and dropping the 40 years of continuity or 1 year of continuity if you're DC or you know whatever you know direction you want to. It might take a while because us fans are holding on to it for dear life, but I could see that going that same direction as well too.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see so many really creative. You see so many creative things like online, like just in forms in terms of like sketches or things that people do or little web comics.
Or like what if
where they're doing things that you wouldn't be able to do in continuity. And the one that immediately comes to mind is James Stokoe did that Spider-Man in Vietnam thing.
Yep.
I don't know if you've seen this, but it was around the time that Orkstein was coming up. I don't know if he did it before or after, but it's this story about what if Spider-Man went to Vietnam and was, you know, in the Vietnam War, and he's, you know, in a Spider-Man costume. He's got like a backpack, so it's a slightly altered version of his costume.
Well, it's what ifs. And it's all what ifs and things like that, which you could do and you could see. I mean, but what's interesting, the question that he asked though is that how does it play into what's going on with creator-owned books and the boom in Image and stuff like that? Is that what Hickman's talking about is still work for hire? It's still Marvel would still own Spider-Man in that case.
Yeah,
I'm saying that would be cool if they would do that, if they would be cool with their properties going in weird directions like that.
Yeah, but
that would be more of like an R-rated kind of thing.
Right, but this
and that's saying they won't. But they're two different things. This one is, you know, DC Marvel are all licensed property books. I mean, they own those characters. They're not licensed themselves, but they are essentially licensed characters because they're licensed to other people.
Yeah.
So he's really talking about the DC Marvel's, you know, side of things, which I can totally see it happening that way.
So I don't know, but the creator-owned stuff creators totally own. They can do whatever they want. They could do a character in Vietnam if they want to because they have total control of it. They don't need to worry about a company above them. So,
but I can see in some point in the future Disney saying we want to put out Marvel comics as little digest books, you know, at Walmart and not worry about comic stores anymore. I can totally see that happening.
Yeah, totally. All right, we got one last question that wants to know why we don't do something.
Hey, this is Brandon from Denton, Texas, and love the guys' show and wanted to know, I always hear you guys talk about what's good in comics, but I very rarely hear you guys talk about what's bad in comics, and wanted to know if you'd ever thought about doing a maybe special edition on things like Superman at Earth's End, or One More Day, or Sultry Teenage Super Foxes, because I think you guys are at your... cynical comedic best when you talk about things you don't like. Anyway, want to know if there's anything you guys thought about doing. Love the show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, we've never thought about it. we're stretched to the limit as it is, but that's just not our ethos. And that's not to say we don't ever talk about bad stuff. Clearly we do. But, you know, we try to only highlight the stuff we like because there's so much negativity out there anyway. And also... it's not as special. If we spent every week ripping on books, it would get really boring really fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
It's got to happen organically. Yeah. You know, I think talking about the cynical energy, like, I don't know. I don't think of it as being that cynical. I think when it comes up, it's just.
It's usually frustration.
Frustration,
you want it to be
good. It's like out of a love for comics. And I don't think you'd ever want to approach it like just. To be critical, just to be critical.
And I don't want to do that show.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like our mandate has always, we talk about at the beginning of the show, has always been our platform, what we believe in. I mean,
aside from
respect for women, it's about celebrating comics and loving them. And now that said, you know, I've been a critic of some sort for,
12 years.
No, the music stuff.
Oh, even more than that.
Yeah, so for me now, it's... Jesus, 17 years where I've been writing about things critically and talking about things critically, where I was doing music stuff before comics. And, You know, and it's a challenge because you got to take the good with the bad. And, you know, it's, and like Connor, like you said, it's real easy to shit on something and be one of those people who tear something apart and make fun of the art and all stuff like that. But our approach is like, listen, we're going to talk, we're not always going to talk about the positive things. Art and negative things will come up, but it's got to be done in a critical way. And even like Josh and I got in an argument where, like, when I was talking about the Captain Marvel book and I said it was a shit show and I hated the art, you know, Josh was really challenging me because he was saying, okay, well, be more specific because you can't just say it's a shit show. You got to say, okay, what is about it? And that really made me take a look at and say, okay, what was it about the storytelling, the character, you know, the way the characters are rendered, you know, and all that sort of thing, you know, and to be much more, a much more fair approach to negatively reviewing something, yeah. You know, because we want to be better than just saying, oh, it's crap.
You don't want to rag on something. I mean, if you're going to talk about something in a negative light, at least, you know, try to use it as like a teaching moment or something. I mean, not to be like pedantic, but to say, what can we learn from this? Yeah. Why is it bad, and what could they do to make it better?
And usually, when something's bad, we mention it. It's because, like we said before, we're frustrated, or because it was something that's, you know, so out of the realm we had to talk about it.
Or it was surprising.
It makes it more special when you know something. We talk about something that's bad, you know that we really felt like it needed to be talked about.
Yeah, like if it was a surprise, if you're expecting it to be good and it wasn't, why wasn't it? Where did it miss? All that sort of thing. You know, like,
right.
I mean, we could easily sit here and there's a litany of titles I could show you that we could tear apart and make fun of, but it doesn't really help anybody, you know, so.
And I also try not to read anything I don't think is good.
Yeah, it's a good point too. Yeah, we don't want to read bad comics, so. Yeah. So, all right. So, if you've got any questions, you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
You almost lost it.
After 349 episodes, I almost forgot the phone number. Calling the voicemail is always great. We got great voicemails this week, and please keep them coming in. It's always good to hear from you.
And we do some other podcasts. The Don't Miss podcast, like I mentioned before, I talked to Megan Abbott about Untold Tales of Punisher Max number 3. The new one coming up on Monday is with Ian Edginton about DC Comics National Comics Looker number 1. So it's a strange character from DC's past. She started out in The Outsiders, and now they're going with the vampire route, which is in that character's lore, and very interesting. So check that out on Monday.
Yep. Cool. And if you need something else to listen to, you can also check out the Make Comics podcast. Took a week off because Josh was on vacation, but I believe he'll be back. I probably won't be back next week, but he'll be back eventually with more.
We should
more.
Commit him to a two-hour episode.
Yeah, we should.
He'll be back with an extravaganza two-hour episode featuring Alan Moore, Stan Lee.
Yeah, Frank Miller. He's got all those great guests lined up. It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be great.
But the important thing is, if you like Don't Miss or if you like Make Comics, go to iTunes and subscribe to him. Make sure you don't miss an episode, so definitely go subscribe to him.
This is episode 349, and which means next week is 350, which is the extravaganza email episode where we talk about the pick of the week, which will now be Ron's.
Yes.
And then we spend the rest of the however many hours answering the listener email. We've got a bunch sent in, but you've got one more week to send them in to get on the show. The deadline is August 29th at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Subject line 350, send it to contact@ifanboy.com, and, you know, send them in. We've got a bunch. We can always take more, and we'd like to go as long as we've got the emails going, yep. So please feel free to do so, and it'll be fun. We're going to do it live, we think, on video, so keep an eye out for the twitter.com/ifanboyfeed, and for ifanboy.com itself, we'll have a post about it. We're not quite sure exactly when, which is why we're not telling you now, but we're going to know, as soon as we know, we'll post it, and you'll know, and you can come watch us spiral out of control live on video.
Yes, I will be going to the liquor store the day before and stocking up.
I'm making a special trip.
Excellent.
No questions are too personal.
Yes, so none. Yeah. Unfiltered. Now we're pulling back the curtain.
Yeah, so send them in. You got one more week to send them in. We want to, you know, send some fun ones in. There's been some good ones, but in the past.
Trashy.
And importantly, keep an eye, and I know you mentioned this, Connor, but keep an eye on ifanboy.com and onto our Twitter to find out when we're recording it, because I'm pretty sure we got this whole video thing locked down. We're going to do it live, so you're going to want to watch that. It's always going to be fun.
And that's going to be on Thursday, August 30th. That'll be when we're recording it. So keep that in mind if you are interested in watching the madness. It'll be Thursday at some point. Probably in the afternoon if you're on the West Coast, probably in the evening if you're on the East Coast. We're not quite sure yet, yeah. So check it out.
So you can get all that information, as well as Don't Miss and Make Comics podcast and all that other stuff, at ifanboy.com, our home. You can also go read Connor's Pick of the Week review for Scout number 60, as well as Josh's review of Darwin Cook's Parker, the score, the Book of the Month review. It's available on ifanboy.com.
Why is that funny?
Because I'm reading the script, and I realized that Josh isn't even here, and he still got me with the script bomb.
Oh, did he?
But if you go to ifanboy.com/about, you can find all of our personal Twitter accounts and other ways to get in touch with us. And the most important thing is go to twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy and follow us or like us so you don't miss anything when you're on your various social networks.
Wow, that was good. I didn't even notice.
That was great. He got me. The fucker got me.
As I said before, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com for the show every week. But if you're doing it for 350 show, make sure 350 is in the subject line. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Make sure you tell us where you're from and who you are. And don't worry about us not getting it on the air. We'll decide what gets on the air or not.
If you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcast. Spread the iFanboy word. And if I may, check out the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast.
You're back.
It's my show. The most recent one I did was with Josh and my regular co-host Dave, and we talked about Jaws. And if you picked up the Blu-ray, I know we all did. It's a good commentary there. So I hope you enjoy that. We had a lot of fun doing it.
I was very angry you didn't invite me onto it, but then I realized that Josh probably would have strangled me.
Yeah.
So it was probably a good idea not to invite me onto that one. So
I thought it would also be a good send off for Josh because he's going on this crazy biking trip, and I figured it was very likely that he could, you know, fall over and like break his neck or something.
It could still happen. Where, you know, he's not out of the woods yet. So
this would be his last hurrah, basically.
Yeah exactly. Yeah, I see that. Smart. Mercy thing.
Hey, if we're lucky, you know. Well, that's awful. I'm kidding. I don't want Josh. I love Josh. I don't want him to be harmed. But man, that Jaws Blu-ray looks beautiful, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, they did a great job on that. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, great show. Paul, thanks for filling in. Always a pleasure.
Always fun.
All right, cool. So we'll see you next week. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.